The earliest horror movies in 1922 by this Danish director. It's called Haxan with like an umlaut over the A, H-A-X-A-N. It's presumably like a silent film documentary about witches, but obviously it's like recreating the witches too. And then it becomes like this. The scary part is like, are these real witches that they're filming? Which like obviously was more underlined in the 20s when film was just emerging in there, and trains would freak people out as they were coming towards the screen. But whoa, it was, it's all about,
yeah, that's right. This is, yeah, yeah.
Real witches.
That reminds me of that actor's studio. Oh, it might have been Hollywood Reporter when they started to do those interview roundtables. Have you seen the one that Donald Glover is in? I think that's a comedy one.
No.
Pretty good. What caught my attention was he's talking about his early YouTube success, and he says that
at the time it was so new, like our friend, like Dominic came, I remember, to a meeting we had, and he was like, yeah, we should put them up on YouTube because we were paying too much money to put them up and like download them. Uh-huh. Let's put them up on this thing that just came out, right, called right. YouTube. Yeah.
And heard of Lazy Sunday?
It was before that. So much so, when we put up our first video, people in the comments said, this isn't real.
Welcome to The Sand Trap, a podcast exploring the life and career of Adam Sandler, one of the greatest comics of his generation. My name is Ben Castle.
Nine p.m. MTV News report. Jeff Lehman, king of shoegaze and owner of 13 exotic macaws, is dead by writing too much in a dating app.
Yeah, that rocked. Today we have another episode.
Thank God.
It's another one that we talked a bit about including if we should or not. It counts, but it's a cameo. It's actually the first one he does where he cameos as himself. The movie is Pauly Shore is Dead.
He's probably in it for 3 minutes.
Yeah, not even.
Maybe less. 2 minutes?
He's used as a foil.
Should we spell out who Pauly Shore is because that's what the movie does?
Should we just give the introduction that Pauly Shore gives himself in the movie?
Absolutely.
I was born and raised in Hollywood, California. My dad's a comedian and my mom owns a comedy club. And my mom didn't own just any comedy club. She owned the world-famous comedy store on the Sunset Strip. The comedy store is like the Emerald City for comedians. Everyone started out there. My name's not The Weasel. My name's Paul Montgomery Shore, PMS. I was just like most kids. I was in Little League. I had braces. I even modeled. I went to Beverly Hills High School. And I wasn't on the football team. I was in the dance company. And after I graduated, I took my acting very seriously. And then it finally happened. One night in the spring of 89, my manager got me an audition for MTV at Mom's Club. And finally, I became The Weasel. Ow! My MTV show led to movies, HBO specials, strippers, and porno stars. Whoa! Yeah, I was living the American dream. And then one day, my so-called glamorous life came to a screeching halt. I got the most devastating news ever. No, not genital warts. Worse. I got a sitcom on Fox.
Pauly Shore is a comedian that became famous on MTV.
Mm-hmm. He was an MTV VJ alongside with Carson Daly and Kurt Loder and, you know, the very short-lived video jockey.
Yeah, a video jockey. I guess a YouTuber is pretty close to a VJ now.
He's 2 years younger than Sandler, 68 versus 66. He became a stand-up comedian at 17, became a VJ in 1989, same year as Going Overboard.
So with that brief introduction of Pauly Shore, what's the synopsis?
It's a mockumentary. I would call it more of a docufiction than a mockumentary, which has now been kind of co-opted by The Office and things. Pauly Shore plays himself. A persona of Pauly Shore, the actor, as existed in 2003-ish, which is past his prime. And therefore kills himself.
Yeah, he commits a fake suicide.
It's not framed as a fake suicide the first time, like in the first few minutes, right?
No.
It's like the shock of him committing suicide, and then it's like, rewind, who am I? You know, and then you learn that he had fake committed suicide, hid out in a hotel, got arrested. Similar to the docufiction mockumentary style, there are talking head interviews with Vince Vaughn, Ben Stiller, Tom Sizemore. They mentioned Downey. He doesn't show up, but
Funny enough, though, in the commentary, he did say that Downey was supposed to be in jail. He just didn't show up that day.
It makes sense. It lines up with this mid-aughties, mid-2000s, like, tabloid Perez Hilton culture. The Hilton sisters show up.
Britney.
All this is, like, forming in the culture, and a lot of the talking heads are either comedians or people who have, like, famously tumultuous public histories. Andy Dick.
Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen opens the movie by talking to Pauly Shore about comebacks.
I don't know what the fuck happened, okay? Things just got fucked up, all right? And no one will fucking call me, and I'm a big joke, and the critics...
Pauly, you don't know what you're talking about. You're great. People love you. You have a following. Biodome was a great movie.
Did you see Jury Duty?
No.
Neither did anyone else.
Did you see Hot Shots?
God, I love that movie.
Yeah, it was pretty good, wasn't it? My point is, Pauly, is that we've all had our flops. Some more than others. But it'll turn around.
Well, how'd you do it?
Talent?
Yeah, it's a really weird cultural document for that reason alone.
It's about Hollywood jail. And then he kind of goes to real jail.
But the most interesting part of this movie was the line that Shore writes for Sandler.
Yeah.
Sandler visits him at one of his lowest points.
Pauly, it's Adam Sandler. You know, the guy that keeps you up all night, the guy that makes 20 mil a movie when you can't get one made. Woohoo!
You know what? Fuck you, Sandler! Fuck you! How about that?
Fuck you, Sandler. And fuck you. Ah, horseshit.
You know, I don't care. What's the difference between me and you, bro, huh?
Exactly. What is the difference? There is no difference, you dumbass.
You know, when I get out of here, I'm gonna beat the shit out of you!
Well, I'll be waiting, Pauly. But just remember, it's Billy Madison, not Buddy Madison. It's the wedding singer, not the weasel singer. You'll always be the weasel. You'll always be the weasel.
It's like if Nirvana's first drummer had made a movie where in jail he was visited by Dave Grohl. And said we were basically the same person. And Grohl was like, but I may never mind.
Yeah. Exactly. It's that back and forth is what makes this movie interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any validity to that statement? Or is that more Pauly projecting onto the situation?
Shore, like, unintentionally presents an alternate timeline. I don't think we ever would have thought to compare them.
No. And the reason that Shore says he included Sandler in the movie was that he gets mistaken for Sandler on the street all the time. That answer felt a little bit light to me. I just think at that time, he didn't want to get into it. But now looking, there's a couple articles in light press. It's framing it as Pauly Shore could have been Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel right.
Doesn't check out necessarily.
For us.
Anybody could have said that.
But we thought that we would spend the episode exploring that tension and seeing what it might reveal about Sandler moving forward. So let's go through their timelines a little bit. Sandler and Shore meet each other through MTV, which was a big running through line of our Enter Sandman season. Almost everything culturally with the Xers can come back to MTV.
Pauly Shore shows up in, well, he doesn't show himself. He's referenced in an SNL episode in season 18. And it's at Spring Break UK 93 in an MTV style on the scene festival VJ interview segment.
Right. Let's now go to the pier with Pauly Shore.
What's up, buddy? Chilling with the week.
That might have been the birth of the insecurity. Pauly actually gets in movies a little before, becomes a full-fledged himself star a little before Sandler with 1992 is Encino Man, and 93 is Son-in-Law. So Pauly kind of gets there first, but obviously Sandler's on SNL. And by the time Sandler hits movies with 95's Billy Madison and 96's Happy Gilmore, Shore is kind of waning.
Shore is West Coast and Sandler's East Coast. Pauly Shore is the son of Mitzi Shore,
mm-hmm.
the owner of the famous Comedy Store.
Mm-hmm. Founded the Comedy Store.
That has had a renaissance of press. There was a great book about it that was turned into a miniseries. I'm Dying Up Here was based off of the book.
Yeah.
Comedy at the Edge is a great book about this 70s scene that references the Comedy Store all the time.
Which I watched I'm Dying Up Here thinking it was going to be like a remake of the Twilight Zone movie segment about on the airplane with John Lithgow. I was very disappointed.
Even today, the Comedy Store acolytes are the likes of Joe Rogan and others. It's still one of the main cultural comedy hubs in American history.
Yeah.
Pauly Shore was connected to all of that and ends up befriending Sam Kinison.
I just love women! My record proves that. It's been love about 9 times now. And it's been real every time, folks. Every time, it was gonna last forever! Remember, you fucking bitches!
One of the most successful, influential stand-up.
Yeah.
For anybody doing comedy, any dude doing comedy in the 80s. The only movie role that he has is Back to School.
Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnamization to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? Because I know that's the popular version of what went on there. And a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in a classroom, hoping I was right, thinking about it. I was up to my knees in rice paddies with guns and Edward going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him, while pussies like you were back there partying, putting headbands on, doing drugs, listening to the goddamn Beatle albums.
He only has 5 film roles. The first is Savage Dawn, then Back to School. That's the second. 3 Amigos scenes were deleted. That's interesting. Pauly Shore's Dead is Archive. I Am Sam Kinison is documentary.
Kinison's legacy is a shaky one, but if you talk to anybody, any stand-up comic of that era, they have an anecdote about him.
So what's the Kinison story?
We went out every night.
Oh, boy.
He offered me tons of cocaine.
And then Sam Kinison. Yeah. Like Sam Kinison, I probably learned the most about dynamics from that guy.
I had to fire him after the first show.
Why?
He showed up all fucked up.
Do you
Kinison,
think...
I got Kinison his first spot at the store.
You got him his first spot?
Yeah.
Like you I were told there Mitzi, the first time he went on stage?
Yeah.
When he wasn't that famous, he was actually funnier.
I sat at the back of the room, man, and I watched the world change. And I felt like I was watching Bird. I was watching Charlie Parker.
Oh,
I was
watching,
you know, early Miles Davis. I was like... I was seeing something really extraordinary.
Kinison was playing a character, and that character and that persona ended up consuming more of his personality than I think he would have ever expected. That bombastic persona was not how he acted all the time, but that was what people embraced the most, so he kept having to do it all the time.
Yeah, he was consumed by a big fury of it, similarly to Bobcat Goldthwait, which we've covered.
And similar to Pauly Shore. With the weasel, this weasel character he plays.
It's just that Pauly underlines it a little more than it was actually in the culture. Or at least Ebert has a quote.
Yeah, oh yeah, please pull up our boy.
He's reviewing Jury Duty. It's his 1995 movie. He says, Jury Duty is another entry in the National Capital Dumbing It Down sweepstakes, giving us a character who likes jury duty because, hey, when you're sequestered, room and board is free. Then he says, after Jim Carrey in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective in Dumb and Dumber, after Adam Sandler and Billy Madison, after Chris Farley and Tommy Boy, here's another character whose appeal rests on rudeness, stupidity, and the ability to make loud bathroom noises. He can't say fart in the Chicago Tribune or wherever this was.
All the news that shits. There it is, I got it.
All the news that shit to print. He says, in this business, one becomes a connoisseur. I can now see that Carrey is a virtuoso, Farley is at least hardworking, Sandler is hopeless. And Pauly Shore bypasses all categories to achieve a kind of transcendent fingernails on the blackboard effect. These are the standings when Shore is like at his peak. This was written in 95. So he ends up negating himself. He proves himself wrong. Because in Ebert's eyes, Sandler is not hopeless because he loves his punch truck loves. I would love Ebert to have seen Uncut Gems.
But Sandler doesn't lose that hopeless quality. His career just becomes less hopeless.
Yeah.
I think both of these guys at that stage of their career in the early to mid 90s were doing the best they could with what they had.
Yeah. A Clinton presidency.
Sandler has been given the platform of SNL.
Yeah.
He's focusing on that. He wants to do the best there.
Yeah.
Shore had to really create a very substantial comic character to become a symbol attached to a giant cultural landmark like MTV. But what that does is it kind of straddles him to be connected to that brand. While SNL, once you leave, you're done. You're an alumni, but you're not all of a sudden representing the show in these movies.
I wonder if it's because Sandler's first four movies' titles are referencing the character. You've got Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore. Those are the two names in the title. Wedding Singer itself is the occupation Waterboy as well. Even if you don't know Adam Sandler's name by then, if you're living in 99 or 2000, you're like, then the movie, it's the Waterboy's in it, you know? Or like, it's got Happy Gilmore in it.
You're right.
But you can't do that where it's like, he's got Son-in-Law in it. He's got Jury Duty in it.
No, they all blend together. Yes, sure. Makes the mistake to never allow himself any real reflection within his persona that he's built for himself. We have a great opportunity for him at his lowest point to investigate the frustrations of having this persona and the limitations of his career it leaves. Mm-hmm. But every moment where you could have the possibility to dig deeper into this psyche, he goes for a joke, which isn't wrong. He's a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
But it leaves you feeling that this movie's really flat with all these cavalcade of stars walking in and saying their line and leaving.
It's true. Its fuel is the cameos. It never lets up on the cameos.
Like a Christmas special.
It is like a Christmas special. That's perfect. It's like the Star Wars Christmas special. It's like a Very Merry Christmas, which I love, but that's because it knows it's a Christmas special.
It uses those moments to have them be filled by this showbiz applause break. It ends up wasting that premise. It's a really interesting premise, and it's very brave of him to do, to say, I'm dead career-wise. Mm-hmm. What if I made a movie where I actually died? That's a very cool move for him to write and direct a movie like that for himself.
Yeah.
But then he uses this safety net almost as like a brag, I felt, to be like, yeah, I might not have a career right now, but look at all these people I got in my movie. None of these cameos that Sandler gets walk onto the screen and then immediately start talking about Adam Sandler.
Yeah, absolutely.
All of them serve this very specified purpose that feels so useless.
Yeah. In Sandler movies, these cameos or walk-ons or famous people play their own characters. They get to be their own characters in a different one, usually in each movie or a shade.
Which is goofy and interesting. This Shore version, they just walk on and talk about Pauly Shore, the character, quote unquote. So those are some of the differences in the tensions that come up.
Mm-hmm.
This use of their persona, where Shore seems to be obsessed with using his own identity, and Sandler seems to avoid it at all costs.
And Sandler's presence in this movie creates a false equivalence.
So those are the stark differences.
Mm-hmm.
But the weird similarity to this movie and Sandler's catalog is the death of a famous comedian, which is funny, people. There is this weird commentary that comics in particular seem to, or anybody who is interested in the politics and the culture of success, fame, persona, they always love death.
Mm-hmm.
They always love this idea of playing with a big event like that.
I lost it because I was about to say, and I don't know why, because it's not like it's important. Why did they pick something better?
Shore's character in this movie sees it as the ultimate tool. And in Funny People, it's used as the motivator for Sandler's character to try to reignite a love of his.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that the death works better in Funny People is because Sandler's character has gotten to the level of fame that Shore's character wants to be at.
Mm-hmm.
Him being a famous comedian doesn't matter anymore.
Shore is looking from the outside. So it's a fiction to him. It's a mythology. He's perceiving something that it doesn't exist because not on the inside.
Funny People plays as just a drama.
Yeah.
That happens to be happening to a comedian. Mm-hmm. Pauly Shore is a comic persona. It's a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't have it crammed with cameos, it would have been a lot more sinister and real. If he was to play this sad, desperate comic character
mm-hmm.
who's obsessed with fame, he gets the spoils of it, but then he can never enjoy them because he's supposed to be dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's some really funny, dark things you could have done, but instead he goes like, and now we get Kurt Loder and these real-time famous people to come in and talk about me. But it's not me, but it is still me because I made this movie. He wastes that opportunity.
It's as if in the White Album, Joan Didion, right when she was about to get to a truth, ended up being like, in walks Jim Morrison and says, hi, Joan, what's up?
Yeah, exactly. Or it's this time in high school mm-hmm. story.
Yeah, it's true.
Some of this stuff that Shore does, I think Sandler gets accused of, but I don't think he ever really gets it.
Mm-mm.
because he's never had a persona that's that distinct.
He never blurred that line.
No, he's never blurred the line because he's never committed fully to a character.
And he diversifies his portfolio.
Yeah, he plays like three guys.
It is kind of that. It's we've been talking about it. He diversifies his portfolio. He does. He's either doing the happy character or he's doing the deeds character. Yeah, exactly.
He only has a few shades that to him is safer. Imagine if he, for his career, had stayed as broad with that voice as he does in Billy Madison. That's kind of what Pauly Shore falls into. Sandler has more of an issue of playing himself.
Shore's placement of Sandler in this movie as his equivalent is almost an unintentional refutation of the accusation that Sandler always plays himself.
Yes.
Sandler does not always play himself because this wouldn't work. He would be doing the Pauly Shore thing. He would have burnt out.
Yes, exactly. This movie is an example of why the Sandler criticism of he makes the same movie every year is not true.
Exactly.
He would not have continued to make movies if that was the case.
It would have been the Pauly Shore career.
Using the same collaborators and the same writers does not mean it's the same movie. It's like, what's that boat argument? Every single movie of his is the ship of Theseus.
Yeah. Yeah. If you repair a boat so many times and you replace every part of it, is it the same ship? It's the same as all of my cells have died so many times, even probably in the recording of this. Certainly my ego has. Am I the same
person? Have to. Yeah, you gotta leave it at the door. Leave it at the mic.
And that's kind of why we had to do this episode where normally we would have skipped it, like the Bigelows. But because funny people comes later, that's why we bring funny people up here. Honestly, props to Shore for making such a rife, you know, we could riff off it off a movie he made.
I know. Well, you know, that's us. That's us. You know, we're so kind. We're so kind to every movie we watch. We'll give it the benefit of the doubt. We'll go in.
It's true.
Now watch him have a renaissance. That'd be so cool.
That'd be yeah, I know.
Would they ever do a movie together? You think that would ever happen?
Yeah, like a duo.
I don't know if I could
I'm struggling to think of someone really who would have a comeback in the way that like Pauly Shore really went down. Because people could talk about the reconnaissance, but he never went away. Comebacks usually are just like...
And he was always hot. Yeah,
exactly. I'm struggling to think of a comeback where it's like, man, we thought he was gone.
Was there even any numbers on this movie?
There's a weekend it came out. It debuted January 2003, but it didn't come out until October 4th, 2004, only in San Francisco to $11,000. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not even really listed on the numbers, but I can bring up the weekend if we want to just... This is great because just last Thursday, I was talking about the number one movie, which is Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. My friend Bridget, the Earworms editor, called me and was talking about, do you remember this like black and white movie where a bunch of animals fall from the sky at the end? I had no idea. I've never seen this movie, but she said something Captain. And I was like, Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow? Similar to Pauly Shore is Dead. That's just a title that's in my head, like Tu Wong Fu.
Whoa.
It's just Sky Captain. And the World is Tomorrow. It's a Jude Law movie. It's part of Jude Law's 2004, which is kind of like Jim Carrey's 1994, where Jude Law was in like Alfie, Sky Captain. It was Jude Law's year, baby. Second one is Mr. 3000. Do you know this one?
That's Bernie Mac.
Okay, yeah, that's baseball though, right? Yes,
yes.
Mr. 3000, Bernie Mac's Mr. 3000.
I am very aware of Mr. 3000. I was going
to say, yeah. Okay, yeah, so that's one and two. They're both new. Sky Captain, the World of Tomorrow, Mr. 3000. Resident Evil Apocalypse. Those Resident Evil movies are fun. Wimbledon. God knows. Cellular. I think that's Colin Farrell. No, that's Phone Booth. Colin Farrell's gets stuck in a phone booth. These are real no-name movies. This is actually kind of fun. I would love to watch every single one on these. That's a Chris Evans. Pre-Captain America, Chris Evans.
Aw.
She tries to use a malfunctioning phone to contact the authorities, but reaches college student Chris Evans. And he has to help her.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's school teacher.
Whoa.
Played by Kim Basinger. Is abducted by Jason Statham, brought to a remote hideout, finds a broken cell phone. Unfortunately, the malfunctioning phone only can contact the college student played by Chris Evans. Chris Evans has to save her. Holy crap.
I watched that. That sounds really great.
That does sound great. That's New Line, Wedding Singers. I mean, we've been following New Line throughout.
Mm-hmm. New Line.
And the number six is interesting because it's Without a Paddle, a Stephen Brill picture.
Hey.
Number eight, a movie I've been wanting to rewatch for a decade. It's Napoleon Dynamite. What a craze.
Oh my gosh, my doppelganger.
It's a Fox Searchlight. What a big hit. Number nine, interestingly, Collateral. I'm going to be talking about that in the Spanglish episode. Sandler almost was in that movie.
Whoa.
Yeah, we'll get into it. And then we got The Bourne Supremacy.
No farts. No farts in this movie.
Hey, 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 pull my finger, pull my finger.
I think I just shat myself.
And though when I beep your way.
Whitey.
Just having some fun in here.
You hear that drug?
Please remember to rate, review, subscribe. Thank you for listening to this episode. Rage Over Me continues next week with Spanglish.
What? You want to say, come on, come here.
Yeah.
Come on, come here.
I think that's it. Yeah, there's the babies. Yeah.
Want to say bye, Ida? Bye, Ida. Yeah, there you go.
Goodbye.
No, I'm dog sitting, so I got to watch these little guys. Little girls, I guess. Yeah, you're not little, though. What's in your mouth?
They're about the same size. Is Ida full size now, or will she be bigger?
Ida should not get any bigger. She's already a terror. Sam has gotten smaller. She's got no hips. Yeah. Her gait's
full
weird.
Full gray mustache.
Yeah, she's all grayed out. Cataracts. This one, prime of her life.
Mm-hmm. Did they smell?
The other day, she like started to heave, and I was like, "Don't you fucking throw up!" And so then she walked over to her little dog bed, and I was like, "Don't fucking throw up on me."